to another exciting episode of Video Game Bang. Video Game Bang. Your weekly source for all things video game. Featuring your fearless hosts, Corey Vincent.
I'm pretty much Microsoft and Marvel. The cans are on. It's when the issue gets real.
People get shot during the day.
And Aaron Carter.
Buy the armor, I equip it, and it's like Pink Thong. The guy that delivers vending machine items in my job. He can play the Rhino.
Fill up your Mountain Dew and grab your Doritos. It's time for Video Game Bang.
What is up, pizzas? Corey Vincent here with the Video Game Bang. And we have a new look today, folks. This is very peculiar. I'll start joining me in studio to my left here. You know her, you love her. If she was a Spice Girl, she would be Ducky Spice. Emma.
I don't even think that's a thing. How dare you?
Oh, I'm making him up. Based off the first thing I thought of because
you saw Duck the Dark in chat. Yeah.
No.
Yeah?
No,
yeah.
It was your Duck Chronicles.
Aww.
So Emma, Heart of Gold, spent like an entire week with these ducklings?
Yeah, ducklings.
In her pool, filled with chlorine.
And then they all died. Why would you bring that up?
I mean, the story is
Why?
Good because your heart was in the right place.
It was horrible.
It was a tragedy. It was like Romeo and Juliet.
I named them all and buried them. It was a horrible time in my life.
Wow.
Way to start the show.
Let's. All right, I'll fix this one. I can still fix the ship. Joining us all the way from Southern California, Ivy Doom Kitty. If she was a Spice Girl, she'd be Kitty Spice.
Death Spice.
Death
Kitty Spice.
How you been, Ivy? How's your week?
I've been great up until the duckling story. I was
me too.
Absolutely fantastic.
Gosh.
And then I went, crashed and burned.
Nosedive.
I'm doing great. Been super busy gearing up for the summer portion of con season. Otherwise, excited to be here. Good to see you all.
And special guest on the show, let me get on my soapbox for a moment, because every time we have this person on the show, it is a reminder to a simpler time of the VGB when we were just brand new. Me and Aaron didn't know anybody in any kind of industry. We were just GameStop employees who had done like maybe 10 or 15 episodes. And we saw Janice Davis on Twitter, I think, and we were like, oh, that's really interesting, an author, Aaron's a writer, let's just cold call email and just see what happens. And she was nice enough to like go on this little nobody show that had 15 total downloads in its history, and now look what happened. The show blew up because of her, and she has her own podcast, and she's done incredible things. Janice Davis!
Hello, everybody. I can't even speak after that soapbox. That was awesome, but also made me blush.
How far have we come, Janice? Like, you're a mother now. I've got a beard. I mean,
it's a big change for everybody.
Hey,
yeah,
equal changes.
From the beginning, though, I have to give you and Aaron props because you were so professional from the beginning, and I would have never guessed you had 15 downloads. You sounded like you had hundreds and hundreds of thousands of
them. Oh, no.
So seriously, though, you guys, you know, you asked great questions, in-depth questions, and I always feel it's common to get the questions of how did you become a writer, or, you know, when did you know you were a writer, or how do you get published? But it was really cool that you guys, you know, really went in depth with not only books but the creation process and what drives us and what makes us passionate, what makes us fearful or angry. And it was really cool to get those great questions from you.
Which brings me to my first question for you, Janice. When did you know you were a writer?
She's going to hang up on us.
Oh, that's how much I've grown as an interviewer. I think I've fallen back in time. So what's new with you? Because last time we talked, you had some cool stuff in the works that you couldn't talk about, but I'm pretty sure it's out in the open because I see it on your Twitter nowadays. But what's the new hotness with you?
You know, I am so glad you asked, because I have been waiting to talk to you guys. I'm anxiously to talk to you about Omen Sight, which is the game that I was a co-writer with Nadim Bukhari. Bokira. He has a very hard name to pronounce, but I'll try my best. he and I were the writers for the game Omen Sight that was just released, and it's getting great reviews, and the gamers are saying that they really like it, and they like the narrative, which I was a big part in writing, so that was awesome to hear. And Chris Avalone was the script doctor for the game, and he and I go way back. We did panels together at San Diego Comic-Con back in 2013. So it was really cool to work with him so long ago, and he's a incredible legendary writer in the gaming industry. And so to work with him on panels years ago when my first book came out, to then write with him on a game, was really cool to have that full circle experience. And Spearhead Games, the developer that made Omen Sight, is an incredible team of people that are located in Canada, and I was able to work remotely from LA to with them, and it was surreal. It was really cool. It was really great, and the game is I 1,000% back it in the story and the characters and what we've tried to achieve with, you know, very subtle but, you know, not preachy at all, but it has these themes of, you know, bringing people together from all different, you know, parts of the world. And I think, you know, that's needed right now.
Yeah, totally.
Topical.
We talked about it in the pre-show, just this crazy mad world that we're in. And so you've been keeping up with other video games, I assume. Who else is writing at a high level? Have you gotten to play any other games where you're like, now as a writer, I completely respect or understand this more?
I haven't been able to play too. I've been playing some Call of Duty, just, you know, for
me too. The storyline in Call of Duty,
not for the story per se, but for just for fun. I don't play live. I play against the robots because I don't do well with being yelled at for not getting high enough kills.
Hey, that's why I stopped using mics long time ago.
Yeah, I can't. You know, I wish I was, you know, up to their standards, but the very vocal players say I'm not, so I just play the campaign.
Yeah, they're not worth it.
Janice, this kind of frustrates me a little bit, because, like, I know who you are and the crazy, amazing things you do. Equestrian, jet pilot, like, I'm pretty sure you were in Top Gun or something.
Glider
pilot. But she does all these crazy things. She writes books, like actual gaming books, and then you won't go online because of the toxicity?
Well, in Call of Duty specifically, okay. I mean,
you were a big WoW person, so you know what it's like to go online and lead an army.
Totally. Like, okay, so yeah, World of Warcraft, I was top DPS, you know, I was really good Shadow Priest, loved raiding, I loved that camaraderie, the collaboration in online games like that, but it's just FPSs are a different world, at least, you know, Call of Duty, they're, you know, they're the hardcore, if you're not, you know, top kills, whoo, you'll hear it.
I don't think anybody would argue that. That's, honestly, I, even back when I played a lot of FPS online, I stopped using a mic years ago, it just wasn't worth it. I was like, I want to play this, and I want to have fun. I don't need some 12-year-old screaming at me and insulting me and calling me names, like, past his bedtime.
Ivy, do you play with your mic, or how do you pursue FPS games online right now?
Nope. I don't listen to anybody. No.
And the mute button.
They're dead. They're all dead to me.
I think that's a very common thing with female gamers, is, like, because as soon as they hear a female voice, like, it's over. Like, fucking game over. You're just screwed.
They flip tables and you're treated like crap. So, yeah, no. Mute button and or just don't, like, you tune it out. Like, if I play Overwatch, I'd never get into group chat or anything like that. And, you know, the only time I'm in any chat is if it's my own team of people that I'm playing with, i.e. friends.
Same.
So, and that's it. This is a teaching moment. Teaching moment here, because we have a lot of men who listen to this show. And so what is proper etiquette for guys? Like, if you jump into your favorite FPS and you do happen to hear a lady's voice, is the proper thing just to treat them like everybody else, or what do?
Just don't be a shitlord.
Do you defend them? Like, if you hear a guy being a dick to a girl, what am I supposed to do? Do I jump in? Do I help? Do I intervene? What's the best etiquette? Do you guys have any, like, stories?
Go ahead.
Yeah, what do you got?
I mean, I liked what your instincts were, Corey. I mean, that was cool that you thought that if you heard, you know, maybe, you know, a guy coming down on me for not being on top, you know, kills, be like, hey, like, it's a game. Like, you know, we're all at various levels. And I think the barrier to entry on some games keeps new players out because you have to, I'm at a disadvantage because I haven't been playing Call of Duties for years and years and years and years, and I don't have that, you know, immediate, that skill that they've garnered. And so it makes it so that, you know, new players are hesitant to come in because they aren't immediately as good. So I think it'd be cool if you jumped in and were like, hey, you know, because I think a male telling another male to cool it, it does have some, it can rub off and you might have more success in cooling off some
They're more likely to listen to another man than they are to listen to the woman that they're berating. So if you want to jump in and defend somebody, it is awful.
Like, that is absolutely terrible.
It's shitty, but
it shouldn't be that way, but it is the way
it is. But it is the way it is. And, like, if you can use that to your advantage, then that's preferable than, like, over silence. Or even if you don't want to say anything, just reporting the person. Because the woman is already reporting this dude. But if you witness that kind of shit, report him. Get him fucking banned.
Do you have any stories specifically, Ivy, of times where, you know, what made you shut the mic off to begin with? Was there a particular game?
Yeah, that happened after Halo 2.
Yes! It's been
a while.
No.
Yeah,
yes!
Yeah, because the entire community on Halo, like Halo, with Halo 2, when you started playing online and everything was great for a while. It was great and it was awesome. And, you know, there wasn't that, you know, competitiveness in terms of just people being assholes. And at some point, it transitioned from that to just people being jerks. And, you know, then Halo 3 came out. And, you know, that tail end of Halo 2, right before launch of Halo 3, is when I was just done. I was absolutely done with hearing it. And Halo 3 onward, I have yet to hear someone say anything at all because I just won't deal with it anymore. I play for fun. I play recreationally, you know. If I wanted to compete, I'd join a clan or something, you know. But that's not my thing. It's for fun, you know. And if I'm going to game and I'm going to be talked down to or treated like crap, then that's going to make me not want to play. So I'd rather mute everyone, not hear them, and I can enjoy myself.
That's interesting because that is the exact same time I got off. It was the switch between Halo 2 and Halo 3. Because Halo 2, I feel like, was like the golden age of multiplayer on Xbox Live. It was absolutely so good. And then at some point, there was a distinct shift. And I remember, like, there isn't a specific game for me because it was just so often and so much that, like, I can't pinpoint a single one. It was constant. It was just constantly being berated either for my voice because I was very young, too. So I sound like I had a very high girl's voice. And it was just
I was always called a dude.
Oh, like, really?
That's a dude. Well, because my voice is generally a lot deeper.
Yeah.
And even my younger brother's friends, if I'd be gaming with him, they would also ask, they're like, oh, you didn't tell us you had a brother. And I'm like, you little asshole. Like, I'm a girl.
Well, and I remember very clearly, like, we were talking earlier about, like, things that you remember. I remember very clearly the first ever unsolicited dick pic I ever got was on Xbox Live after a game of Halo 2. I was 12 years old.
Oh, that's criminal.
And it was the year that they introduced the Xbox Live camera. And that was the first, like, time that I specifically remember the first time some dude ever sent me a picture of his dick.
What? So how does a 12-year-old respond? Did you tell your parents?
I didn't know what to do. But I knew it was something that I shouldn't be seeing and I shouldn't be looking at. So, like, I freaked out and I deleted it and I never said anything to anybody.
You're freaking Janice out right now because we just had, like, a long conversation catching up on how her new amazing family is going.
I
mean, exactly. Like, Emma, it strikes a very nervous chord with me because I have a daughter, she's 3.5, and she's already asking so many questions. I mean, if we have the news on, she can pick up just the energy of the topic, and she'll say, why is the TV angry? Or, you know, like, or she wants to be on my phone, she wants to be on tablet, she wants to be in the media, she wants to be in the computer, and I'm all of a sudden, you know, bombarded with these questions. You know, my husband saying, we need to delete anything that's not age appropriate. Like, right? Like, what if she clicks on a news site and there's, you know, shots of shootings and, you know, like, and then Emma, the thought that, you know, she already wants to play games on our tablet that It just freaks me out.
If it makes you feel better, I can say it never happened again on Xbox Live. It was the only time it ever happened on gaming, but it was the first, and it was something that like severely stuck out to me because I didn't know why or who. It was a grown ass man too. This was like a middle aged man. But like, it never happened again on that platform. But it's that sort of thing where like, even something that you think is safe and is fine is like, it's like, yeah, there's an element there, but like, even things that you think are fine, you never know how it's gonna go.
Right. And she stumbled on this little golf app game, which I thought was just a, you know, single, like, just you're by yourself playing. And
right.
She's you know, flicking the balls with her finger, trying to get it in the hole. And then Eric is like, looked at it closer, my husband, and he was like, wait, she's playing with someone. Like, it's a multiplayer.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh. And then, I don't know who it is. I don't know if they can chat. I don't know. Obviously, she can't like read or write right now. But just the idea that I didn't know she was playing with someone. Oh my heart!
And then the kicker was that she was actually winning.
Yes. She's a born gamer, guys. She was kicking the ass of whoever she was playing with.
How are you gonna? Because I mean, you strong, powerful personality with you, Janice, and you know, obviously, you take your passions very far and seriously. Have you thought about that moment if Cora comes to you and she's like, I don't like video games, or I think I want to be a musician, or I don't know. Like, how are you gonna be with that side of parenting? Are you trying to push them towards the gamer direction in little subtle ways?
I really feel like I was talking to a video game developer that I used to work with, and he has two kids in. Can you still see me?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Okay, my computer went to sleep, and I was like, oh gosh, I hope I'm not disconnecting. And he has two teenagers almost out of high school, and he said that he continually got the question of, you know, you're a game developer. What is your advice? And I'm kind of modeling after what his advice was, which was, give be open and give technology and push technology towards your kids, because it is the future, you know, it is the jobs in the future, and they need to be very well versed in technology and in tablets and in their computers, because if they're not, they'll be behind. And it really made me rethink like the holding back, and instead, as a parent, okay, let's be open to it and then just curate it, right? Like, let's just keep an eye on what we're showing, but not keep it from, like, just because she's three doesn't mean she can't play a video game. Let's just make sure we know and mm-hmm. teach her how to pick out video games, or how to not to buy the, you know, buy, like, she doesn't know yet. Like, okay, don't buy this, or don't click on this.
All the little microtransactions and... Yeah, because you hear, like, you see headlines about that shit every once in a while, where they're like, some kid accidentally spent, like, $3,000 on his phone. Yep. He didn't know he was using real money.
Yep.
So I like that idea of turning off the instinct of, okay, let's hold her back, and opening up everything, but then just showing her how age appropriate is important, and let's make sure to, you know, step by step, like, okay, right, we can play this, but we might not be able to play this game, and mm-hmm. we can watch this video, but let's block this more adult type of channel, you know? So yeah.
That's right. And I think I like I'm obviously not a parent, but it's like one of these things where we all learned new technology as we were growing up. It's kind of just the norm now that you learn the new technology, but at the same time you learn how to use it safely. Like, you learn absolutely how to communicate with others and how not to communicate with others, and what to say and what not to say and what not to do, and what, like, it's just, I feel like to us it feels like an extra step, but for the current generation, it's just going to be how they consume media.
I think mm-hmm. it's kind of interesting to think of it as like this current batch of Koras and the little babies out there are like almost new humans. Like, everything that they could possibly want to know at such an early age is just there.
Well, and even Google the fact, away. Yeah, and like even the that fact easy. That your 3-year-old knows how to use a phone and can play a game on your phone—that's mind blowing to
yeah.
me.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
I had my grandpa, I remember, gave me his encyclopedias. It was like all lettered A through Z.
And the whole set.
If I wanted to know about Wolverines, which was my favorite animal because of the cartoon. Yeah. I was like, oh, this is a real animal. Let's go to W. You
pull out that W. Pick up the big-ass dusty book.
You get a paragraph, and then that's all you know about Wolverines.
Unless you go to the public library.
Which was not happening in my neighborhood. I was not going to...
And Ivy, something that you said about, you know, just a Google away is also an asset in the fact that she is interested in things that I don't think a three-year-old might have been able to be interested in had she mm-hmm. not been exposed to media. Like, for instance, we stumbled upon, you know, videos specifically for kids about the human body, and they do episodes that describe how, you know, your kidneys or your lungs or your heart works. And she is so fascinated about the body and the organs and blood, and that now, like, when we get a cut, she wants to see the blood. She wants to put Neosporin on it and a Band-Aid. Oh, wow. And
yeah, a future doctor right there.
Oh, oh my I love goodness. It.
It's amazing. We brought her, you know, this actual touchable, like, skeleton that has little squishy organs inside that you can take apart and look at the organs and match them to the sheet that has all the names. And she's so, I think, even more interested in it because, like you said, Ivy, there is things that now we can enhance. Like, we talk about transmedia. I know Corey and Aaron and I talked about transmedia. I think, no, we were on a panel together to talk about transmedia and how, you know, we're having these expansive world-building experiences, not just for movies, but now for, you know, books or medical. And even game developers talk about how they're helping hospitals and doctors become better at their job because of media, because of video games. And so I do think, Corey, like you said, there are these new humans. These are our new superhumans.
They're little superhumans that are just going to have access. Like, and I'm just interested to see what happens when they get a little bit older. Like,
right.
We're seeing it in the formative years. Every friend I know who has a kid is like, yeah, my kid locks me out of my iPad. Like, he broke the code. He hacked into it. Like, and these are smart IT people running.
She can draw the pattern on our phones perfectly.
Yeah. This is insane. This is like a form of technology and way to use it that no other generation in history that young has had access to.
I'll put it this way. It's like super sad. When my sister was going to school, she asks me, she asked me to save something from my computer to her computer. So I say, okay, do you have a floppy disk? And she's like, what's that? And
symbol. You know, for me, it's like the look of shame, like, oh god, I'm this old. No, it's like, no, like, we have these. She's like, it's a stick. She's like, do you have a stick?
Well, yeah, well, it, like,
what do you mean a stick, Amy?
A floppy disk, the 3.5-inch disk. She's like, no, a stick, like a memory stick. And I didn't have a memory stick.
I'm doing social media for an esports organization, and the big word is memes. You know, it's all about the memes,
the memes,
and. For me, growing up, memes were transferred on floppy disks. I remember my uncle distinctly coming over with like a CD case that he put floppy disks instead, and he would open it up and be like, want to see a funny video? And he'd put it in the computer, and we'd watch these terrible videos of like a dancing baby from Ally McBeal. Like,
yes, the dancing baby.
So when I'm doing my technology job with memes and stuff on Twitter, I think back to like, that was my origin story. Like, these kids who are doing the same job, probably better than me, like, they don't know how hard I had it. We had to use floppy disks to tell our jokes. But, yeah, it's crazy world.
I think I was the last generation of kids that had floppy disks on our school supplies list in the beginning of the year.
They don't even make those no more.
Nope.
But, Corey, if I can circle back real quick to what you're asking me about games, if I can't, and Emma and Emma, I agree with what you're saying about just the kind of the toxicity sometimes that you feel in multiplayer. I tried Star Citizen for the first time the other day, and it's this spaceship exploration game, Persistent Universe. And what was interesting is how I have changed as a gamer since I was very hardcore back in 2011. Well, I was really hardcore 2002 and Final Fantasy XI. That's when I cut my teeth on, when I was really hardcore. And you know, took breaks depending on college classes and all that. But I realized back from 2002, I was really excited about the social aspect of playing Final Fantasy XI with people in Japan and in England and all these different places, because at that time I was really trying to bring back my voice. Like, you know, Corey, you mentioned so kindly that I have a powerful voice. And when you said that, it struck a chord, because I still don't see myself as that, because back in 2002 I had lost my voice completely from trauma and personal episodes of violence, and it was Final Fantasy XI that really made it so I could be in the world again, but not really, you know, safely. Yeah. And I gravitated toward that social aspect because there were so many encompassing people that were just like, oh, let me help you get to know the game. And I didn't receive any like, oh, you're a girl. Like, I didn't receive any of that. It was a great opening to video games back in 2002 in Final Fantasy XI. And I really built back up my ability to converse with the world through that game. And then I realize now, you know, playing Call of Duty in 2018 and feeling like, oh, I'm not up to par and I'm not good enough, so I'm just going to play with the bots or play the campaign. I play the game Star Citizen that's still in alpha, and, you know, so it's not, there's not that many players that you come in contact with because it's this spaceship exploration game where you're discovering planets and there's miles and miles of space to cover, so it's hard to run into people.
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting that now I was kind of relieved. I was like, oh, I can just play in this expansive universe, explore this planet that no one else is on, be in this really cool spaceship, feel like an astronaut. And I didn't miss or gravitate like I did back then with that social component. So I'm interested on like my own evolution as a gamer from 2002 to 2018, and how I needed that socialness to kind of help me heal and meet people. And then I kind of came back to this, a different social component, which was FPS, not, you know, raiding and MMOs. And I was like, oh, this doesn't fit. Now I'm going to go to more of like a, where you're almost feel like a single player because it's such a, you know, vast universe. Mm-hmm. And I was like kind of relieved, and I was like enjoying just playing alone. I don't know. How do you, Ivy or Emma or Corey, do you ever feel like you've changed as a gamer of what you need or gravitate toward?
I think I'm changing now. I think hearing you say that and talk about what you did is like making me rethink my whole life, because it's like when you're playing online and you're mentioning like, you know, how you lost your voice, but it was through nice, kind people online that help you find your way back and gain your voice. So all those, I'm replaying every time in my head where I was toxic to somebody on Overwatch for whatever reason. Oh, you get off the payload, you know? And then now it's like, who knows? That person could be going through some stuff. That person might have lost their voice. And here I am. Get on the payload. We lost the video game. So thank you for that guilt. And and I'm going to be better now.
It's
so
good, though. It's a good guilt.
It's good to be aware.
It's a learning guilt.
Outside, it's good to take a look outside your bubble. If you're in chat or listening to this podcast and, you know, you're the guy who pops off like I do sometimes, like, man, you don't know what people are going through. And sometimes...
Because, Corey, like, what if those Final Fantasy XI players had not brought me in and treated me like a family member? I back then, to think that I could be on a panel in front of thousands of people, I would have, you know, shrieked from the room and cried. Like, the fact that I was able to come to now do public speaking is a huge feat. Like, I don't know if I would have been able to do that without that healing process. So isn't that interesting?
Yeah, and it was positive people who helped, like, make it happen through a video game of all things.
Right, exactly. And then in 2018, I was playing Call of Duty and had such a different experience. And then I went to Star Citizen because of that peaceful serenity. And like I felt like I was in space. So how much farther can you get, right, from society than the stars?
Star Citizen is super interesting. We've talked about it. I mean, I feel like we've talked about it on this show since like forever, because it was huge like news of the stuff they're trying to do. And then it kind of fell off my radar. So you said it is an alpha now. Can anybody just join and play that, or is it closed alpha?
I believe it's still closed, but they're on the verge of another patch, which is a huge one where it had all these different mechanics are coming into play, and there's a FPS portion of the game. There's a racing part of the game where you can like just like race other spaceships. Yeah, and then there's the persistent universe part of the game. So it's a very complex to code and to create because of the like you know how in Destiny you land on a planet, but it floats, yeah. like you're sitting there and loading?
Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah. Star Citizen, you see a planet and you fly to it. It's actual, like, miles. Like, you're actually, you know, traversing through the universe that they're building. So I know firsthand that the coding of that is insane, and that, you know, they have so many people that are creating the actual assets and the, you know, the engine parts of the game that are so complex, and that every time they change something, you know, that ripple effect of all the bugs that it creates, and they have to fix those bugs. So I just setting the game aside and the name of it aside, space to me, space travel, and I like what this game represents, because space to me is what we all can come together and stand behind and rally behind and get excited by, because there's no division. Like, it doesn't matter where we were born or who we are or what our parents tried to tell us, our, you know, what our religion or what our political affiliation is. Because that's another thing I realize as being a parent. I'm like, my parents told me I should be this, you know, affiliation, and I should believe this, and like, and they were very like, especially my dad, who was in the Army and the state police officer, like, very hardcore about it. I didn't have a choice. It was like, yes, sir, you have no opinion.
Right.
And now as a mom, I'm like, wait a second. I want her to have an opinion, and I want to show her, like, all of the different religions and all the different political sides and all, like, I want it to be an open discussion. I don't want to tell her what's right, because that means that she's going to think someone else is wrong, and that's not fair. Like, it's an automatic division, right? But, like, space, we can all be like, hey, we want to be astronauts and discover Mars and be like Venus. Like, we want to know. I'm so excited. I'm choking up. Anyway, that's what I love about what Star Citizen represents, is like this game that's pushing us as an evolutionary species to get out there and explore and become, you know, a better us.
My religion is space.
Yes, that was so cool.
I think Janice just converted me to space as well.
Awesome.
I mean, we're getting a space force too, though.
Right? Oh my God.
Space force, yeah.
No.
I'm signing up for space force.
Oh, I love you guys. Like, this is energy right
no, that's,
here.
No, that really, like, I really like where you're going with there, especially with, like, religion and stuff, because, like, I didn't grow up, like, not going to get into, like, religious conversation or anything, but, like, I grew up with my mom, didn't, like, subscribe to one belief or anything. Like, we weren't Christian or Catholic or anything, but she loved to study other religions and, like, take bits and pieces of their philosophies and, like, the morals, not necessarily the beliefs, but the morals of how they live their life, and apply that to her. And so, like, we learned so much from our mother. Like, my mom would teach us about Islam. She was Wiccan for a while. Like, we learned about Jehovah's Witnesses. Like, she would just pick and choose everything. She's like, I like this, and I like this, and I like this, and none of it, like, really impacts anything else, but I'm just going to apply this to how I live my life so I can be a better person.
Right. I mean, it's so cool that you were able to get, like, such a diverse tip, like, just a tiptoe, right? It's not like you had to memorize every single thing about everyone. Like, you just got a taste of it, and I think that's so cool that you sound and look and feel like such a well-rounded person. You know what I mean? Like, it, like, just meeting you, I'm like, yeah, you're just so amiable. And that's really...
I will tell her she did well. I'll be like, Mom, everybody says you did good.
Well, I tell her that, like, as a mom, I want to do that. I want to pick up every book and, you know, read them with Cora, and, you know,
that's
so accepting, and it doesn't automatically... You know, because, like, my parents were like, okay, this is the right religion and everyone else is a sinner. Like, it was just so close-minded, right?
Right.
I can't get behind that. It just makes me feel sad.
Well, and then, like, her open-mindedness, like, applied to everything else, too. So, like, you were saying books. Like, anytime I was interested in a book, she would read it. Or, like, even if she wasn't that great at video games, she loved to sit down with me and be like, all right, teach me how to play this. So I remember, like, playing the original Halo with her and, like, just the two of us, and I'm trying to teach her how to walk, and she's shooting, she's like, she has a shotgun, and she's shooting the corner of the wall because she can't figure out how to turn. And she just wanted to be a part of it.
Why are we Corey and I are like, I want to do that with my mom, right? I hope. I'm the only one that's like, oh, I want to do that with my mom.
That reminded me of, like, I've had a pretty rough upbringing. I feel like I had my family upbringing would make a pretty dope, like, movie. Like, really? There's tons of, yeah, it'd be like Narcos.
Do you need me to ghostwrite it?
Oh, please. Oh, it'd be Breaking Bad mixed with like all sorts of like Sons of Anarchy. Man. Like crazy white trash druggy stuff. And my dad is kind of a terrible person who I've completely disassociated with. Oh. But the best memories I have were those two or three times I could distinctly remember him and I playing video games together. He was trash. But he would grab the second controller and we'd play Tekken. And it was like, I don't know. It's the only like really, really, really good memories I have of him. And he was trash. Like I'm saying, he's a terrible person. Mm-hmm. So like, that's powerful in a way that like those shared experiences that was like one of the times he really took interest in what I was doing and we had fun together.
Right.
It was crazy. Mm-hmm.
That does need to be, that story does need to be told. I volunteer. I don't a lot of books right now, but I want your story told.
I've had this idea, like podcasting, obviously my passion in medium, but I've really thought about doing like a docu-series just for my family's sake. Mm-hmm. Of doing like where did this go wrong? Let's start from the beginning and interview my grandmother and see like and really make my dad the star because I turned out okay. I'm not, you know, I don't know. I think I did okay with it, but I think there was lessons to be learned from like the tragedy. And I think drugs are really, really bad. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you hear drugs are bad, but like it's one of those experiences where I could tell you drugs are really, really bad. Like,
yeah.
Don't do them. And if maybe making some sort of podcast where I could tell the story that culminates and maybe reconnecting with an interview with him. I don't know. I've thought about it a lot, but it'd definitely be the most difficult thing I'd ever done.
Right.
And I don't know. I don't know if the it could stir up things that shouldn't or cause more dissension or I don't know.
It's hard because you have to relive it. Every character, especially in a novel, every character I have to write for, I have to relive their arc, their plot, right? Their arc in the story. And it's very emotionally draining because you have to get into it and hear the voice and go over their backstory over and over again to try to get inspiration for the next chapter. And especially when it's a series, and I think you should do it because I think you have it. If you, like you said, it's an interesting point of view and a story that isn't that often told from a family perspective, but it is going to be tough.
Oh, so how was E3, everybody? What did you guys think of E3? E3 was pretty good.
If you're
looking for like a happy subject change, no, just like our whole like talking about, you know, parents and video games reminds me that like I got into video games and I tell the story all the time because I think it's really cute. But I was 7 years old when the first Halo came out. And I remember seeing it and watching my dad and my sister play. And I really wanted to play it because it looked so cool. But I was really afraid of the Covenant. The aliens just scared the shit out of me. But I was so invested in the story, I wanted to know what it was. So I would make my dad play it, and I would sit on the couch next to him and watch it because I couldn't do it. I couldn't watch The Covenant, but I could take my eyes, like, I could take my hands off my eyes for the rest of it. And that was what got me, like, hardcore into gaming, was watching making my dad sit next to me and play this game for me because I couldn't do it. And then, like, growing up, like, Halo was always big to my family. Like, my dad got us into it. My sister and I bonded over it a lot, like, it's crazy how video games can just, I don't know. I mean, it's just, maybe it's any experience, but in my life, it was video games. It was like what brought everybody together.
Oh, absolutely. I have a question for you guys too about how you feel about AI, because I just got asked to write for a new AI brain, which sounds really cool.
What is that?
Thank God they chose you.
What does that mean?
Oh my God. I feel so much peaceful that's the one AI that will not do Skynet or some crazy
thing. Wait, can you like explain what that means? Like, what does it mean to write for the brain?
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's funny. Every time I'm in Video Game Bang, you guys are always to hear about like my new projects that are going on. I always reveal. Like, you know, because it's just perfect timing. You know, you always happen to have me, right?
We know.
We have a way of knowing. So basically, this company that is creating a new AI brain, instead of asking, so it's just like, you know, Alexa or Echo or Siri or whatever you want to call it, whenever you talk to Google or say, okay, Google, what's the, you know, weather or tell me my shopping list. So those are all very useful, you know, AI type brains that, you know, search the web and then pull info for you and tell it to you, or tell you the info that you've stored, like your lists or whatever. So this AI brain, think, who has seen the movie Her? For everybody, raise your hand if you have.
I have, yeah.
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, so Corey and Emma, just a little bit.
Yeah, it was like on a plane situation, so I saw.
Me too.
Do you know the premise?
Yeah.
You know,
oh yeah.
What,
yeah.
It's about Her. Okay.
So yeah. Sad.
Right.
I didn't finish it.
I feel you. So, it's think of that. Like basically, mm-hmm. This company is on the track for that, where instead of you always having to prompt the AI brain with questions to get the answer, this AI brain is going to listen to your questions and, you know, remember them and know you and ask you questions back.
Whoa.
So it's like, yeah. Like a natural language sort of a thing.
Yeah, it's so cool, you guys.
So it's getting to know you.
I'm thrilled.
It's learning from you.
Yeah, and it's just it's very exciting to write for, but at the same time it's weird because it does feel like the future like is here.
Right. So when you're writing, go ahead, sorry.
Okay, basically they showed me the brain and there are these, you know, they call it extruders and absorbers. And so, you know, it's absorbing information and extruding the answers or its point of view. And I have to write examples of dialogue that I've, you know, learned and mastered over, you know, 7 years of writing books and games and narrative to help the brain learn our way of language communication, and it's crazy. So like I have to come up with examples of dialogue of what I think you and I, all of you, would ask, and then what, like the rabbit hole of what that would go toward. So let's just brainstorm here. So if we ask, you know, what do you like to do? You know, the AI brain, I have to write a wealth of examples that it can learn from, skiing and writing, okay. Yeah. And, you know, all of these different just written examples. Mm-hmm. And then the brain will take sentences that it's learned from you and construct what the wealth of information I've written to formulate back. Like, it's crazy.
Wow.
It's so crazy, you guys.
See, the thing that always scared me about that with AI is in the wrong hands,
right,
that could be chaos. And that's for me, I've always been just this paranoid person about everything, so that's always a thing that scares me. Like, in the wrong hands this could be so bad, but in the right hands this could have the potential to do so many amazing, you know, boundless things.
And I'm glad you brought that up, Ivy, because like Corey said, I am a very, to a fault, I absorb and I'm very sensitive to the point where if I watch a movie that is horror in any way, I will have nightmares. Like, it sinks.
Same.
In. Wow. Yeah.
Are you an empath?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I have okay. been. Yes, I have been.
Yes, called same. Yes.
And an empath. Yes, yes. Where I the heaviness of the world is real to me, and I can't just mm-hmm. I can't disassociate. Like, oh, this is just a movie. To me, like, that's really happening to someone, and right. It's very visceral. It's very. Yep. It's, oh, I
because you feel like you feel yeah. like it's happening to you. You're experiencing yes. that pain or that happiness along with that other person or event that's going on. So for me, it's very difficult to watch the news or see what's going on in the world, because for me, I feel all of those things. Seeing a sad moment in a movie about loss, for me, feels like I lost that yes. person. I feel their pain and I relate to it, even though I may not have experienced that loss physically in my own life. Right. I absolutely feel that.
I can almost right. confirm this for Ivy in the times where we'll get a message where she's like, I had a nightmare last night. I'll be like, what? Of what? And you're like, well, no, I was watching.
Yeah.
And like, I felt like it happened to me. Like, it's like totally
because
based
I have
of-
no one to talk to. When I have nightmares, the first thing I want to do, I want to call someone or my mom.
Absolutely.
And say, hey, like, I need to work this out through my brain because it feels very real. Yeah. I woke up, I'm sobbing because I right. feel like I experienced this, even though I know it, I didn't. I'm still going through all of these emotions and right. like, I just need to get it out of my system.
I remember that conversation distinctly, and me being completely kind of the opposite was like, Ivy, it was a dream. Like, it's not real. But you're like, but my cats, my cats, Corey.
But my cats.
It was just interesting. It was a new way for me to, like, I'd never experienced that with a person before, and it was eye-opening. And it's not, I'm not making fun of you whatsoever. I'm just, for me, I'd never experienced it, and it was a learning moment. I was like, wow, that people could really be that sensitive to some emotion that I deem completely fictional or not real, but it was right. real to you, and it was nuts.
Yeah.
It's cool. But,
which is why I am, like, I'm being very cautious, and I'm being very thorough to make sure that I write empathetic scenarios, like, you know what I mean? And very polite and proper usage of human connection and human right. interaction. And one of the things that this author that I interviewed on my podcast, well, the Assembly of Geeks podcast, The Gamer's Dominion, and I'll say, Corey and Aaron, you guys are really inspirations for what gave me the courage to say yes to hosting that, by the way. So aww, thank you.
I love that show.
You know, yeah, just... yeah, anyway, well, that's a whole other topic. But
yeah.
So on this show, I was interviewing an author who is, he's a, you know, an engineer and an author and knows a lot about tech and AI specifically. And he said he really, it irks him when his son talks to whatever, you know, they have, Echo or whatever, and or Alexa. He said specifically Alexa because it's a woman's name and it's a woman's voice. And he said it really irks him when his son goes, Alexa, what time is it? What's the weather? Whatever the command is.
Yeah.
And because he was like, it's teaching my son not to be respectful to a woman's voice. Like, he's not saying please. Aww. He's not saying thank you.
Oh, you're right.
And and he had this moment where he was like, my son is interacting. Yes, he doesn't know it's just a computer. It sounds like a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And here he is, so he asked me, you know, not asked me, he's told me I'm concerned with the future of AI, and just like what Ivy said, that we are not writing and instituting these very necessary human parameters and connection factors. And so I remembered that. And when I got this job recently, I mean, it just happened, right? Just got this job right for the AI, and I remember that, and I go, I am going to try my best to make an impact and help, you know, keep that sensitivity between us that we need, and that a parent is worried about that his son is getting used to treating a woman with no polite verbiage.
Right.
Wow.
Like, we're becoming increasingly detached.
It's funny because I feel like an insane person because when I use Alexa or when I use my Xbox Kinect, oh, sorry.
Oh, Alexa, stop listening. Alexa, stop listening.
When I use that device or I use my Kinect, I feel crazy because I say thank you when it does things for me.
I'm not sure.
Like, I'll tell my Xbox and be like, Xbox, go here. And it does it. And I'm like, thank you. Like, you're not the fuck crazy. Am I talking to?
No, you're awesome.
I'm not kidding. I agree with you.
Yeah, I agree with you on that because, my stuff got stolen, but that's a whole other thing. We've gone over that. But when I had my Alexa, I'd get home and say, Alexa, how was your day? You know, like, I'd converse and, oh, it was great. Or, good morning, Alexa. Or, Alexa, good morning. How are you? You know, things like that. Only because my house is so quiet. I live by myself. It's very, very quiet. It gets so lonely. So, So, like, just having those, for me, like, just having that dialogue with Alexa is really cool. But it's, for me, it's always just been very friendly, like, with what Emma's saying. I've never been demanding of Alexa unless she gives me,
she talks back sometimes.
Unless she talks back.
Let's be honest. Sometimes Alexa just is spiteful.
Or sometimes she'll say something randomly on her own, which is creepy as hell.
Well, for Cora, if she's in the room and I ask, we call ours Echo, but if I ask Echo to turn off the light, I will say, Echo, thank you, so that she can hear Echo say, you bet, or anytime. Like,
it responds?
Yes, you can say, if you say the command and then say the name again and thank you,
changed the course of my everyday life.
And
I'm gonna
Cora
do that all the time.
Hears that, so you know, because she like, if Eric forgets to say thank you or you're welcome or may I or I do, she'll be like, mama, say you're welcome. I'll like, oh yeah,
that's so
but,
cute.
So it's cool. And so I'm specifically and what's cool, Ivy, too, is that this brain will be more conversational. So if you come home and say, how's your day, this brain will not only answer but follow up, which is awesome. Like, that's, it's so cool that it'll be like, its main purpose is conversational, fun, you know, it's interactive. Yeah. And whereas what we have now is for commands, like what's the weather, right, turn off the lights, like, you know, or Xbox Connect. So I would love any and all of your input, and anybody listening and watching, what would you like, you know, this AI brain to have, and what would you like to implement, and what do you see as pros and cons, and I any and all feedback, please, because I'm literally on the project right now and it just started. So I want all of your input. I would love to voice it.
I feel like it's one of those things where it would be hard to have it like not respond if you're not polite, or like you didn't say please so it doesn't work. But if it had like positive reinforcement, like if it registered that you said please, or you said may I, you said thank you, like it responds in a positive way, and their response is like, it's positive reinforcement, like you only get this sort of thing, like, or if the voice responds in a different way, or there's different commands that are nicer or turn out better because you used polite language, or it uses polite language back at you.
Yeah, maybe giving it a little bit of that sass too, like, I don't know, if you say some, if you ask it nicely, it'll do it like you said, and give you more of a positive tone, mm-hmm, and maybe it'll do it a little quicker too.
Yeah.
And then if you're a jerk,
write this down. This is awesome. I'm gonna write it down.
If it has like a loading screen if you're a jerk about it.
Yeah. If there's a jerk, she'll be like, "All right, in a minute."
I'll get to it when I want to.
Yeah, I'll get to it in a minute. Yeah, I think that would be cool. And
just, that's really cool.
The fact that you guys have actually, like, these empaths on the show have actually thought to, you know, care about the AI saying please and thank you. Again, something to me that blew me away with this newfound information. Now when, like, the robot overlord decides to rise and you guys are spared, I'll know why.
It's interesting too.
Like, I was polite to my overlord.
Exactly.
And
when Alexa sits on her throne, she's gonna say, "I spare Ivy, Janice, and Emma because they said please."
It's interesting too, because like I say thank you to the robots that I talk to because I'm simply not used to not doing it. Like, it's like programmed into me that like it's just rude not to say these things, so it's second nature. But I've never thought about the fact of doing it on purpose so that younger generations realize it's how you talk to somebody.
Yeah.
Or like, even, or like, you know, you're saying, like, not realizing that, you know, you can't just demand something of a person the way you demand something of an AI. That's interesting.
Right. And like you guys said, what would be, it would be so cool to have, like you said, not that the AI won't do it, but what would be something sassy or something cute that, you know, the AI could say, where, like, you know, could, you know, you could throw in a please in there.
Yeah.
You know, as a writer, I am still working out, like, how can I help the brain come across not preachy, but still indicate, like, that a may I and a please and a thank you are appreciated. You know, that's a very hard line. Ugh, you guys are gonna have to help me.
Well, the thing about, okay, so here's a question. So with your daughter, for example, how did you teach her to say please and thank you?
When she would say, "I want water," I would say, "Okay, honey, when you want something, it's really nice to say please. And it helps people, you know, want to help you more when we're polite." That's how I would explain it.
So it's like finding a mix of something like that, but also not treating the user like a child.
Oh, yeah!
It's like finding that balance in there. Or like, you don't want your AI to be like, "Well,
look, sweetie."
Right.
Did my Alexa just mansplain?
So it's like a balance. Yeah, that's right. I like that. And my mom, you know, she's always been really good at grammar, and English was her favorite subject, and she loved, well, music and English, and so she would always teach us, like, okay, may I, and please and thank you, but she would always, you know, try to help us if we said something incorrectly. She would be like, okay, you know, yeah, you can say that, but grammar-wise, you know, you would want to say, like, one of her big ones is, "I feel badly," and everybody says, "I feel bad," but she's like, "Oh, technically it's I feel badly." So she's like, "Will you please teach Cora that it's badly?" So I'm like, "Okay, for you, mom, I will try to go."
My mom used to harp on the one that my mom harped on was it's not me and my friends, it's my friends and I. Constantly. Right? And it's funny because even in conversation, I've never forgotten this, because like if she is talking about something, she's like, "I'm saying this thing, but also this thing," she will literally in her sentence say, "However, comma," And then I'm like, she says the word comma. And so when I was like in school, I never forgot that you follow that up with a comma because she constantly fucking says it. Right? And I say it sometimes.
My mom and your mom have a lot of comments. That's awesome. So yeah, I love if you guys have, I would love, you know, my contact info is on my website, and anybody that has any, I really want to be a good, you know, influence on this future technology, this AI brain, and I love any input. And I'm also working on a new video game for a different company that's coming out that wants to be, it's not unannounced at all because it's very different. It's similar to, you know, this kind of interactive AI technology, but different, where you're like the god view, and you get to go with this character interactively on, think of the way back in the day, like text games, what are they called?
Mobile
games.
Very, very old, where you would text the command.
Text-based games? I think that's just what
they're called. There was like a slang term.
Slangful term. Yeah. All right, text-based games. Think of it like that, but visually. So you're commanding the characters in the game to quest and puzzle, like, but it's in that text-based scenario where it's very more, you know, a narrow scope, where you're in it. I kind of like Diablo, right? Where you're like, you feel like you're in the game, god view like, but more interactive, like an AI brain. So that's also something I'm now writing for this game company. So it's interesting that my writing jobs are going very AI futuristic, interactive, more Her, like the movie Her. So it's Ivy, like you said, it's cool, but it's also like, wow, kind of eerie. And
It kind of also reminds me of Joy from the new Blade Runner movie. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Oh, yeah.
But that what you're talking about, it sounds like it's kind of like a mix between the two.
Mm-hmm.
Because with her, she definitely does learn from the guy. She learned from
Ryan Gosling, whose name I can't remember in the movie.
Yes, him. Yeah, so she learns from him, and she definitely, you know, feels those emotions and things like that. And I think it's kind of like, it sounds like a marriage between the two.
For you as gamers, is that what do you think of? Does that spark interest? Does that spark, it's too different than what we have? How does that make you feel?
No, I love it. I am so on board with, like, I know a lot of people are worried about AI. Like, Stephen Hawking was very like, no, don't do this. I am so on board with it. I am so on board with everything, the way technology is advancing. Like, anything
as long
new.
As it doesn't kill me.
Yeah, as long as it doesn't kill me. As long as it follows
the
laws of robotics.
Freaking giant apocalypse, I'm fine.
Yeah, like, I'm so here for the advancement of everything. Like, I can't wait to see what all of this becomes.
Because it's good to hear, because, yes. You know, Corey, you and Aaron have talked about how when you're playing a role-playing game, you know, like Omensight, the one I just wrote for, you know, you're in there with a companion, but it's a... You can't go a certain direction. You have to follow, you know, you're forced,
linear.
Right? You're forced down the narrative. Linear, yeah. Thank you. So what do you think about how the fact that this game is going to be the ultimate sandbox, but you're the god view, you're, you know, talking to this character, but they're asking back, like they're challenging you back. Like, are you sure you want to go take a left? Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's not going to be linear. Like, your companion isn't going to be the one just helping you or following you. Like, they're actually going to ask you questions back. Like,
that's almost scary. I remember Lionhead Studios, the guys who made Fable, before they got acquired by Microsoft, or maybe during, they put out this thing called Project Milo. I don't know if you guys remember that, but it was a little 10-year-old boy named Milo.
I didn't. Mm-hmm.
And
I don't know that one.
It used the Kinect, and you talked to this kid, and he'd ask you questions, and you could, like... He would throw something to you, and you would, like, have to pretend to catch it. Like, it was really, really out there.
That was, like, one of the first things they did with Kinect, right? That was, like, one of their, pushing what the technology could do.
Never got off the ground, to my knowledge. It was Peter Molyneux, so he was really known for exaggerating and making stuff up anyways. But that was the first time it ever crossed my mind, and I was very curious about it. I didn't like what I'd seen, but it did open it up to, like, wow, the future of role-playing games could get Westworld-y here really quick.
like
in a good way or a bad way.
Yeah, in a good way.
Depending on who you are.
Yeah, but a game like the way we look at these linear stories now, and you know how we're like, oh, well, linear stories, but we have RPGs where you could go make these decisions, and you know, you're the dictator of these storylines. You know, if you want to go left, you go left. But to think that maybe there's going to be another level to that.
Because, like, when you think of that, like, there's still an end game. There is still a point still a game. That you're going
there's
towards.
Still zeros and ones right. to where it's either, you know, if-then programming.
Yes.
But if it gets to a situation to where it could go all over the place based off of things you say, you know, or how it learns you, or that's scary,
you completely
man.
Change it.
That's so scary.
I think one of my favorite AI that I've ever seen in game is the alien in Alien Isolation.
Okay.
Because oh, that thing is terrifying.
When you die multiple times, it learns your routes.
Yeah.
Like if you hide in the same, if I hide in the same locker every time, it knows I'm going to be in there. So the next time I respawn and I go to that locker, it goes there because it knows that's where I just died.
Yeah.
So the way we look at linear games now to these big Bethesda RPGs, I'm just thinking, well, there's going to be another level to where we're going to be like, oh, it's just like an RPG. Like I can't talk to the character and become its friend. And,
right.
You know,
there's like, always the next level. Like we think we're at the top right now. I mean, we are at the top right now. By its nature of what technology is and can be at this very moment. But, like, there's going to come a time, you know, 20 years from now, we're going to look back and be like, what the fuck were we doing
back
then? Yeah,
that was so lame, man.
There are only 34 endings to Beyond Two Souls?
Yeah.
Wow.
Now my companion is actually the best man in my real wedding because we've made so much good friends. Oh, man, Janice, you always get our brains spinning. Like, this is like... This is like,
awesome.
Yeah, this is crazy. How you make
it's
us
always,
think.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's always, I feel the same. It's always a really great conversation.
You can get all of this.
Last time, I remember Aaron, he was helping. We all were brainstorming on a character in the sci-fi series of like where you should be from, or because I was having a trouble like picking the criteria. So I write novels for companies. Sometimes they're game companies, sometimes they're movie companies, and this particular project is for a movie company. And hey, if you guys want to have cameos in it,
done
characters from my book in the movies.
That's a dream come true.
Done. Well, where do we sign up?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
I'm all in.
One of my bosses was like, okay, I want this character to be a foreigner. Like, it doesn't matter. You pick, Janice, like, where, you know, what country they're from or whatever. And we were all brainstorming, and we couldn't come up. I remember we all were like, I don't know. We were throwing out all these different countries. But Aaron, yeah, he told me that he was going to, you know, email me and give me more ideas. He never did. But I'm
typical Aaron.
Now it's
Canada.
So I'm on book two of 3 for the sci-fi series, and I just finished the fantasy novel that we talked about last time. It's done. I shipped it. Ooh. It's in the hands of the company.
Congratulations.
Now.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. How do you celebrate that?
Thank you for asking. Because I literally it was April 24th and I was making the very final edits, and my nanny who watches my daughter while I'm writing, she was supposed to leave at 5:15 and it was like 5:30. So I'm like sweating because, you know, she's supposed to leave and I'm making these final edits, and she knew that it was the day that, you know, I needed to send in the manuscript, and she was fine with it. She's like, it's fine. Take your time. We're having fun. And I'm writing, and I finished the very last edit on the last page. I composed the email. I attached the document, and I hit send. And then there was no fireworks. Like, this 365-page document, you know, 90,000-something words.
The world just kept spinning.
In my laptop, and I just hit send, and that was it.
There was no, like,
I got it over, it's gone, it's over. I text my husband.
I bet the AI you're designing to celebrate with you.
You know,
yeah.
With my mom on the phone.
This is true.
We went to dinner. Yeah, the AI.
Will celebrate with you.
Your mom's pretty incredible. I remember I met your mom at a convention. She's like a perfect little partner in crime, man. She runs that booth.
Yeah, she's a runner. She's a biker. She's a lifeguard. She's a swimmer.
Damn.
And my final note, and if we have time, is that I'll say she has inspired me. She Oh, she doesn't want me to say her age on it, but I'm going to say it. She just turned 70. Nobody tell her I told
all right,
you.
All right. I don't think she listens regularly.
It's our secret.
But you know what? What's cool about that is that she inspires me to write characters that emulate her, and I still have a hard time. Like, in pitch meetings, you know, I'll be in a Beverly Hills skyscraper in a room of men that are in charge of, you know, producing all these movies, and they'll say, okay, this female character, she's going to be, you know, 18 and 25. That's what we always cast. And I have to face my fear and speak my voice and say, actually, you know, this character that I wrote, I envisioned her, you know, to be, you know, 60s, 70s and still kick ass. Like, you can still be a kick ass character and be in your 50s, 60s and 70s. Like, she is, like, my mom is proof, right? Right. That she is a swimmer and a biker and a runner and a lifeguard. And it's like, they can't wrap, like, still media can't wrap their head around, like, you don't have to cast a female in, if you want her to be a strong kick-ass character, she doesn't have to be in this tiny age limit.
Right.
Like, so I'm doing my best, guys. I my little voice, you know.
No, and we appreciate it.
I think it's comforting for people to know that there is a Janice Davis in that room.
Yes, it is.
You see, like, we talked about the meme of the, you know, the guys in the boardroom, and then the one person talks out of line, and they throw them out the window. But I'm glad to know that there's a Janice in there fighting these fights, so that we're gonna little by little we will institute the change that we want to see.
Absolutely. And even though I'm writing, like, you know, a novel, that is, I'm not writing the screenplay, but I'm writing in the same world, right? So I can say, look, as a writer, I'm writing these characters, and this is why I'm envisioning them as this age or this ethnicity or this background or this whatever gender. Like, it's not fair that we still have these stereotypes that I'm trying, guys. I'm trying.
Oh, man.
I love it.
We're gonna have you back. We've been way too long without you, Janice. We gotta get Aaron back on so you guys could reconnect. I know it killed him to miss this one, but we'll have him back on with you. And but I think this was, I learned a lot as a dumb man. I feel so much more in tune with what's going on out there. I hope other people do as well. Janice Davis, you can hear her on her podcast, The Gamer's Dominion, which is a part of the Assembly of Geeks Network. You can find her on Twitter at Janice Davis, and pick up the book. It's available all over the place on Amazon ebook. You can get it. It's The Holder's Dominion. And then is this
a
one
woman that, going head to head with a hacker, by the way?
Yeah, it's strong female lead. It's like a Syndicate MMO, like, gets into the real world. It's pretty amazing. And then
I have four other novels finished, but I don't know the publishing date because they're in the hands of companies and red tape. And
oh, so that means we got at least four more guaranteed.
But OmenSight, you can see my writing in OmenSight. I have lots of writing in OmenSight. It's out now on PlayStation and PC on Steam.
Ivy, you're heading into convention season. What are the last? What are your next appearances down there in good old LA?
Anime Expo this Saturday from 4 to 6, booth 411, like information. I don't even know if that still exists.
No, people don't know what that means anymore.
Oh, no!
I mean, everyone knows the slang.
Yeah.
What's the 411?
What's the 411? Even that's getting old, though.
That was the number you dial on your phone to find out the... Oh, God.
You guys
God.
Remember popcorn? Anybody call popcorn?
Oh, Jesus.
No.
Emma? See.
Is that where you had to call and they would tell you what movies are playing?
Yes, there you go.
Hello and welcome to Movie Phone.
Yeah.
Movie Phone.
777-FILM.
And then you got...
Ivy, I hope we see each other at San Diego.
Oh, yes, for sure. We're both going to be at San Diego Comic Con.
Yes, I will be there as well.
These three will be in San Diego. I will not.
I will only be there Friday and Saturday. I have a panel on Friday and two on Saturday. I won't be there any other days, but will you guys be there Friday and Saturday?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. I'll be signing at my booth 4016 all 5 days. Yeah, 5 days. All 5 days at San Diego, and then I'm heading out right afterward to MCM Manchester in the UK. So if you guys are out there, Fancy. Make sure you guys come and say hi, see me. That's my schedule for the next month.
Let's go back to Janice too. I'm sorry because I did the plug, but I don't know your offhand the panels and times and stuff for your San Diego Comic-Con.
Friday will be, I am on Tony Kim's panel, which is called Building a Geek Brand. That's Friday at 2 p.m.
Tony's awesome, by the way.
Wait. Saturday. Yes. I'm confused. Friday at 2 p.m. is my panel about creativity and how we finish novels and video games and stay inspired and get through those creative blocks. And Saturday, I have a panel about narrative design in general. So narrative design for books, for video games, for movies, and how those are the same yet different. You know, how you tackle as a writer all of these different writing jobs, and then also how to, you know, get into the industry and become a writer. And then I'm also on Tony Kim's panel building. Yeah, and he is awesome. That's how Ivy and I met.
Yeah, you're with Ivy's friend on there too. Anna Mia, I believe. Who else is on that panel with you? That seems like a big one.
That's right. Anna Mia and Andre Meadows.
Yeah, he's been on our show too. Oh,
yes. And
we're all connected. We are all one.
And then my panels have Dennis Illick, who's an amazing photographer. I also have Rovia, who's a video game developer, creator, writer. And I'm so mad, you guys, because, you know, I'm confusing Wizard Worlds. You know how I have panels?
There's so many.
I have Wizard World panels in Boise, Idaho. If anybody's going to be in Boise, Idaho, July 13th, 14th, and 15th, I'll be there. And then I'll be in San Diego those 2 days, Friday and Saturday. But basically, writing panels, creativity panels, book panels, and building a brand panels.
I told you, real-life Wonder Woman. And yep. Emma, you're going to be at San Diego Comic-Con. Give us your rundown.
Yes, I will be at Comic-Con, but I am not fancy or special, so I don't have any, like...
You're in a fashion show.
That's true, but only because Rachel. Yes, Thursday is the Her Universe fashion show. If you guys are interested in that, that will be Thursday at, I think, 5. I think lineup for that starts at 1. You do not need a San Diego Comic-Con badge to attend. It is in a hotel in the area. So if you want to go to the Her Universe fashion show, if you're getting in the area, don't feel like you have to have a badge. You can just come on in. It's going to be a fun night. And other than that, I will just be hanging out, cosplaying, chilling, shopping.
All right. Well, that was
You guys, will you please? I'm dying to hear what you think about Owen's Night. So please play it. Tell me what you think about the writing.
All right.
Please. I'm so excited. Well,
that's not fair because maybe a couple years ago that could have been possible, but now we know you so well and love you so much that there's no way we're gonna not like it.
Right.
Like, yeah. It's that thing when you're so close to a person, like. You've ruined it. We're the worst people to critique.
Tell me
your
favorite character. Play it and just please tell me what your favorite character is, and I'll tell you how many pages their backstory was when I had to write.
Oh my god. Okay, we're gonna do it. We'll do it. Omen's Sight. I'll check if it's on Steam sale. I'm buying it tonight.
Yes. All right. We're having a summer sale. It's PlayStation and Steam.
All right, everybody. And just to let you know, we're doing a huge giveaway still. A couple weeks left on it. If you're in Twitch chat, !! Giveaway gives you the link. You can go to our Twitter page, click on the top tweet, and you can enter to win a Nintendo Switch in honor of the VGB 5-year anniversary. So you're going to want to try and win that bad boy. But that's it, guys. We're going to do a little bit of an after show for those of you on Twitch. So if you're listening to this, you should be on Twitch. I got to thank the big sponsors, Oblivion Comics and Coffee. Come for the comics, stay for the coffee. Sacramento's number one comics and coffee store.
They're so cool.
Yeah.
You had me on with them.
Yes. Yeah. They're open.
First opening, right? Yeah. When they won the funding. Like,
yeah. It's amazing. It completely executed the dream. They've been amazing partners for us. They have a video game bang themed drink. It's amazing. We love that place. Also, our GamerSups. GamerSups GG. Get your bump with GamerSups. And Energy Esports. Thank you guys for esporting. That's it, everybody. Thank you so much. And we will catch you next week.